Hey guys, welcome to another episode of 10 and 10er. Thank you so much for taking the time and tuning in. I hope everyone is doing all right despite everything that is going on. This episode isn't really planned, to be honest, which is also why I'm alone. Otherwise, I would have done this episode with a guest for sure. But basically, I was reminded this week that something happened in Turkey 7 years ago. And we're still experiencing the outcomes of this today. And so, because it's kind of like the anniversary of these happenings, I wanted to talk about them because not many people know about them. I mean, Turkish people know about them for sure. Like, there is no, if you ask a Turkish person, they will definitely know, and they will definitely have an opinion. There is no way that they don't, whether it be good or bad. But I feel like this didn't get a lot of international attention, or at least when, back in 2013 when it was happening, I didn't really see this being reported anywhere unless you were really looking for it, which, as a 17-year-old, I didn't really know how to look for this information and where I can find it, which now changed, of course. But yeah, so I thought I'd talk about this to raise some awareness and to, I don't know, I'm really upset about this topic. When I was researching and I was like trying to remember like the timeline and what had happened and all of these things, like constantly, I had to stop because I had constantly tears in my eyes, because it's infuriating. And I'm so upset for my country, because I wish this had a different outcome. And I wish we would have come out of it victoriously, but unfortunately we didn't. And the fight still continues. So, I don't know. What my main purpose is to inform people, and my other main purpose is to remind people that already knew what happened and who were there that this fight is not over and we will be back at some point. Because as I know, Turkey and Turkish people, we are very stubborn and we believe in our causes and we don't give up easily. But don't let me, I'm getting ahead of myself. So the topic that I want to talk about today is the Gezi Park protests, which happened in which start which started which I cannot talk anymore, which started on the 28th of May 2013 in Istanbul. And so basically, the reason these protests started was because environmentalists were doing a sit-in protest at Gezi Park in close to the Taksim Square. On the European side of Istanbul, because the government had decided to bulldoze the park and to erect a new shopping mall with military barricades, with historical military barricades, but that's not important. The reason why they were protesting is because, first of all, it wasn't legal what the government was trying to do because it was supposed to be a protected area. Because it was one of the few green areas that were left on the European side of Istanbul. So it was quite important, but the way that the government responded to it was to send riot police. Like, can you imagine having a sit-in protest with like 50 people and then the government sends riot police because they just didn't like it. And so they came with like water cannons and rubber bullets and all of these things. And so the protesters started tweeting. And actually, one of the most important things during these protests was social media, because that's how people were reporting on what was actually going on, because none of the news stations would be doing it. And I will get into why later, but social media played a crucial role and is still playing a crucial role in fighting the government. But anyway, so people were tweeting, and as soon as the word got out, people were like, they were pissed, they were done, and because there was a lot of things happening before that I will explain also in a second. But basically, suddenly Taksim Square was filled with thousands of people, and they were fighting back, and people started opening up a camp actually. And so suddenly, like, these protests swept across the country. There was protests in 80 plus cities. People were protesting for about 2 months every day straight. And the reason why people were so, like, frustrated with the government and why these protests even, you know, had the extent that they had was because there was a general dissatisfaction with the governance of Turkey. Mostly because, so the AKP has been in power since 2002. And they took over a Turkey that was quite economically and infrastructurally, is that a word? Anyway, economy and infrastructure wasn't that great at the time. And they kind of like rebuilt the economy. And so until like 2010, everything was great, you know, people were like, okay, economic boom, great, there's infrastructural development going on, great, people are getting jobs, great. But then in 2011, like 2010, 2011, things started changing. The government was becoming more conservative. They were trying to push an Islamic agenda. They were starting to ban certain topics from school curriculums. They were, for example, they were not allowed, like, schools were not allowed to teach evolution anymore. They were trying to ban alcohol consumption after 10 p.m. There was increasing poverty, there was increasing corruption, and it became more authoritarian and fascist, basically. Mostly because, like, for example, Erdogan was trying to make constitutional changes that would unite more power in him, which he pushed through later on. And that's just like one of the many examples. Other than that, like, the park kind of represented also that kind of thinking, because the AKP was trying to push this through, even though the court had decided to that it was unlawful. The opposition was saying that this shouldn't be happening, and they didn't give a shit. So they were like, yeah, we're still gonna do it because we can. And it was like this power trip basically that they were having. And since 2011 also, there was a lot more like restrictions on human rights and freedom of speech and press. There was a lot more journalists getting arrested, artists getting arrested, because they were, you know, speaking out against the government. There were fines for news channels that would and non-journalists that would be critical of the government. People like, I think Erdogan has shut down Twitter, like social media, multiple times nationwide, to stop the spread of certain messages. There was also increasing gentrification. There were jail sentences for journalists for blasphemy. Also, there was increasing environmental issues, like the park was one of them, but there was also there was new plants being, like, new nuclear plants being built in other parts of the country. They were trying to build the third bridge in Turkey. There was also some like, apart from trying to change the constitution and all of that, they were also, you know, they were kind of fueling the civil war in Syria, and people were more and more suspicious of what the government was actually doing on our border. And so, like, a lot of the, so all of these things were like kind of stacking up. There was like they were trying also, I think the month, I don't know if it was in the month itself or leading up to the month of the protest, they were trying to change abortion law. So there was also women's rights issues going on. There was other protests that were shut down by riot police, like the 1st of May protest, for workers' rights. And then concerning Syria, there was a twin car bombing in a city close to the border, and actually it came out later, thanks to a hacker group in Turkey called Red Hack, that the government had planned this attack for, political purposes. And so there was more and more dissatisfaction, and that's why that tweet about Gezi Park was like the last drop in the barrel, and why the whole country got mobilized. And so in the beginning, the protests were very peaceful. It was mostly sit-in. They were camping at the park, and just, people were doing yoga, they were reading. There was like a lot of I don't know, solidarity and camaraderie. And there was a lot of, like, there was old people, young people, like there was people who were over 70, there were people who were under 20, and everything in between. There were feminists, there were LGBT activists, there were some Marxist-Leninist organizations, there were socialist political parties, Kurds, Turkish people, everyone side by side, Armenians, all of them side by side, because we were united in the cause, because we wanted to get rid of this government that was clearly not, considering their people and what's best for the country. And yeah, we just wanted to get rid of corruption. So people were protesting peacefully, and then I think 3 days in, the riot police became violent. They stormed the park with like basically bulldozed it with water cannons. They were setting fire to tents. They were using tear gas, and that's when like it just people snapped. Like after that, the protests became not protests anymore. They were riots, but they were rightful riots in my opinion. There was people building barricades. There was medics in mosques and other places to take care of the people, because the police would not let ambulances through to help people who got injured. A lot of tear gas was used from the police. This made many people lose their eyesight, get terrible burns. 12 people actually died during the protests, and many more got injured. I think around more than 8,000, and more than 5,000 people got arrested. And you would think that a president who cares about his country would stay in the country and address the issues at hand, but no. Erdogan changed. Like he just left the country for a trip to North Africa, and he had the audacity to call the protesters terrorists and looters, and many people are still actually in jail for, on terrorist charges because they were involved in the protests. And so this man goes and comes back after 4 days, and he's giving a speech at the airport saying like these people are, bad for Turkey and blah blah blah blah blah. And yeah, the biggest opposing party, the CHP, they were with the I mean they were against Erdogan, but many people were frustrated that they weren't really on the on ground with the protesters. And the opposing parties were really like asked to not get involved as the party. Like when people from the party participated, they were supposed to be considered individuals, which didn't really help the following political steps in Turkey. Because then so the protests like this, they went on for about 2 months until the end of July. But they continued pretty much until November 2014, but like more scarcely. I don't know. It wasn't like every day. Like in June, July, like there was protests every day, and there was almost a a clash almost every day. And then they kind of died down. Mostly because in July, a Turkish court announced that it had blocked the government's decision to redevelop the park, which was kind of a victory for the protesters. But, the government didn't really care because they still did it anyway. If you go now to Gezi Park, it doesn't exist anymore. It's just concrete, which is very upsetting. But yeah, there was like And there was still like a lot of demands that weren't met, but yeah. The reason, so people would continue. There was, people would bang their pot outside of their windows every day for over a year to, still show support. There was still, like, I think Turkey is now the country with the most journalists in jail. I know that the number of journalists in jail back in November was around more than 120. I don't know if China or Turkey is now number one, but not a good sign of democracy if freedom of speech is still very much restricted. So all of this shit was going down, and in 2014 there were elections, not really elections, but it was basically to like reconfirm his Erdogan's spot as president. And also this was very, very, very, very important because he, aside from being a president, there was also the vote would decide if the constitutional changes would happen. And part of the constitutional changes is was that he would become that the position of president would become an executive position. So he would have more power, and basically there was no balance of institutions anymore, because usually in a democratic system you have the three powers that are balancing each other: the legislative, executive, and the judicial, I think. I'm not sure anymore. But anyway, so basically he would, have more, he would basically be unstoppable. And he won that vote because well, there was a lot of forgery, so it's estimated that around 2.5 million votes were forged. Yeah, okay, I am confusing the timeline, see? But the constitution changes came later in 2017, but in 2014 he won. And he was basically actually, because of party bylaws, he was not allowed, he wasn't supposed to run anymore, but he did run. And yeah, he got reelected, but also with bribing, with forgery. There's a lot of, talk about, what was happening was not like democratic and not fair elections. And after winning, he it was also the first time that it was the elections were based on popular vote. And after winning, he basically just reinforced his own power. He built that more than 1,000 room palace on a national reserve that was supposed to be like protected, because he was like, I don't care. I can do this, so I'm gonna do it. So again, like power trip and whatnot. He threw more people in jail. He staged the coup in 2016, which he blamed on Gulen and the military, and to have a legit, like, quote unquote legitimate reason to throw more people in jail. I think he dismissed more than 70,000 people from their jobs, including teachers, police, military. Politicians, all of these people, some a lot of people left. Yeah, there was that. So this went on. He also shut down social media a lot of times. He bought more news networks. There was more a firmer hand on what people were supposed to see. I remember during the protests, actually, I think it was CNN. They basically, while the protests were happening in the very beginning, they were brought, instead of broadcasting that, they were broadcasting a documentary about penguins. So, for example, the penguin became a very big symbol during the protests that, some people are turning a blind eye to this. But yeah, and then in 2017 is when he had the vote on the constitutional changes, and that's when he basically gained almost all of the power. But the important thing was that He lost Istanbul, Ankara, and Izmir, which are like the biggest and most important, politically, the most important cities in Turkey. So there was that, you know, that was like one of the few parts of resistance that we could still see happening. And it also happened again last year, when there was local elections, and again he lost Istanbul, Ankara, and Izmir to the CHP, the biggest opposition party. So people are still resisting, but like, you know, I think the biggest question I get when I talk about this is that, like, okay, he's doing all of these terrible things, and like he's shedding people's, like, the the population's wealth, basically, actually literally, because when the coup happened in 2016, which again I will insist that he staged that to reinforce his power, he told the civilians to go and attack the military. Like, it was supposed to be, it was a staged military coup. So, you know, people were there with firearms and tanks and whatnot, and he told civilians to go out on the street and fight. And of course people died, you know, but these people were then portrayed as martyrs and not as victims to his brainwashing, which was, you know, he used those people to emotionally manipulate the rest of the country as well, which again, like that, and also the fact that he used that coup as a reason to fire so many people from, you know, like very important positions, like judges as well, journalists, teachers. Yeah, I don't know, I think speaks for itself. So then, like, you know, a lot of people are asking me, like, why does he get so much support? And I think it's like a mix of things. Like, one, he portrays himself as this man of the people thing. Like, he was like, oh, I grew up poor and blah blah blah, and so I understand what it means to be poor, because, you know, again, poverty, I can't talk anymore, was increasing in Turkey, and so there was a general dissatisfaction, and he was basically running on that campaign for a very long time, because it appealed to people. But I mean, you know, he is now one of the, like, he's probably the richest man in the country now, because not only has he, like, does he own news stations and all of that crap, most of the essential companies that, you know, like water companies, oil companies in Turkey are owned by his family. So yeah, it's a bit delusional for him to say that. And I think also part of the reason why people support him is that he basically, I think he's pushing this, he's basically relying on religion a lot. He wants to make Turkey a pious country, and he wants to create a pious generation. And I think there is this, I mean, during the protests, you could see, again, I mean this, people from all backgrounds were at these protests. There was people with hat scarves, there was, again, feminists, there was LGBT groups. Like, people did not care, because people were united under a cause. But Erdogan successfully has driven a major, like, gap into the country between two sides, which is, like, the people who are religious and the people who are not very religious. And which is crazy to me, because I think 98% of the country is Muslim, like, I mean, according to, yeah, surveys, whatever. But basically there is, like, he's running on this campaign that, like, people are good Muslims if they vote for him, because he, you know, he was yeah, banning alcohol and, like, all of these dumbass decisions that he was making that people perceived as, like, good. Like, they were like, yeah, that's what we want, because, you know, we should, like, there's people who want an Islam, in Islam state, for Turkey to be an Islam state, but that's not what Turkey is and never was. And I think there was this, he basically was, like, demonizing the West, which, you know, fair enough, because the West has fucked up the Middle East, including Turkey, many, many times, and still screwing it over. I'm not saying that that's not true, but he basically said that because they're screwing us over, we cannot be like them, and we are not like them. And he was driving this divide that, one side of Turkey is more valuable and better than the other side. And so, people are just rallying around him. Like, there was this, whenever I talk to my family about this, because we are all, no, we don't support him. None of us support him, basically. But my father would always say that people who follow him see him as this prophet. And I think that is very, very true, because people just idolize him. Like, he cannot make any mistakes, and like everything he does is perfect. And there's very few people who are willing to change and to see like the other side of the story, because yes, he has driven economic developments in the beginning, but where is it now? Like, Turkey has never been in such a bad economic state. And he's very smart. He's not a dumb man. Like, he twisted in a way that it's the fault of the protesters, for example, like, it's the fault of the other side. It's not because of him that the economy is bad. Yeah, I cannot tell you actually why people support him, because I just don't understand that. If you think about it, what everything he did to this country, the way that he hurt his citizens that he is supposed to protect, and whose interests he should have in mind. He betrayed us, all of us, not only one side or whatever. Like, all of us have been betrayed, and used and manipulated and brainwashed. And he's basically like, I used to, when I was younger, I used to compare him a bit to Hitler, because he's basically, and a lot of people do actually, because he's tapping into kind of like a national shame. Like, people, there was always a bit of a like a divide in Turkey before, that like, the snobbish cities look down on the people who are, from rural areas or urban areas or whatever, as if people in the city are better or whatever, which was also wrong. But because there were so huge economic, social, and educational differences between different citizens in the country, he could tap into that divide by saying that people who have been shamed should not feel ashamed. And which, like, that's in itself, that like isolated is not a bad message, but the way he put it was basically like that side is the only way that Turkey is, and this is how Turkey should be. And yeah, became increasingly authoritarian, fascist, etc. I already said this. But yeah, so I think he's very emotionally manipulative. I think he is brainwashing people. There's people who believe that the protests started from the opposing party. They were started from the CHP, from the opposing party, and that like young people were used basically, or tricked into doing the protests. Like, there's people who believe that, and I'm, oh my God, it's so. It's he's controlling the public thinking and mind. And of course, if you have been oppressing the press even before the protests, and you're restricting freedom of speech and freedom of assembly, then of course there is no there will be supporters. And like, if you tap into the emotional connection of people, especially when people die at the hands of the military. Like, if you paint them as murderers who died for their country, like, who will say like, no, like, they just died because they were dumb. Like, if you say that, that's who's gonna like be on your side, like, people died, that's terrible either way. Like, we can talk about if the cause was good or bad, but the fact that he even. Why you have riot police that you clearly use against your own people, and then you say that the military is doing a coup, and what you do is address the public to go fight them. Why don't you send your own riot police, my guy? Like, what? And then they die, and then you use that their death for your advantage. That is fucked up, my guy. So, yeah. I cannot say. Every time I talk to them, it's just like every time I talk to someone who is supporting Erdogan, they're just basically saying that he is a nation's man and that, you know, they feel represented through him. And on one side, I can't blame them because I understand that the political and social divide in Turkey existed before and he's just exploiting that. But on the other hand, I'm like I am also holding them accountable because you should be at this point, you know, you should be able to see past that facade, and see what all of the things, like, he is using all of us and he is exploiting all of us. But yeah, it's hard sometimes to get through to people. Yeah, there is still like actually just 3 months ago, I think in February. So, you know, there was still people, there's still people in jail for the protests, basically. And there was a court order, like there was a court hearing in February for nine of them, including Osman Kavala, who was a very big figure in the protests. And he was tried for the protests only now for some reason. And he was acquitted, but literally hours after he got acquitted, he got rearrested, and now the judges who acquitted him are under investigation. And it now they're he you know he was be he was rearrested because of the coup in 2016. So like the government keeps finding ways to silence the voices of the people who are speaking out, and it's crazy to me that like no one is paying attention to this. Like I remember also during those times, like I think 2013 to 2016, 17, 18, it was basically the height of the refugee crisis, and like Europe was making deals with Turkey to handle the crisis, even though they were violating human rights. Like, how could this happen? No one was saying anything. That is crazy to me. There was no sanctions. There was nothing. There was like slight criticism when the protests themselves were happening, but there was no consequences for the country, and it's still continuing. And I think, oh my God, yeah, it's very, very frustrating when you have Europe claiming, like, you know, that they are fighting for human rights every day, that they then overlook this girl's misconduct and that they continue to do so. Like there's still no consequences, like, you know. And then Turkey did this stupid ass thing to like try it and invade Syria at the beginning of this year. Like, what are you doing? Why are you starting another war? Like, what is this? Who asked you to go there? No one, literally no one. Yeah, okay. So the next elections, basically after he the last presidential elections, I think were 2017. So the next presidential elections were latest will are supposed to be held latest May 2023. Now the government is still deciding on a date. It might be before. It's not supposed to be later than that because, you know, they still need to keep up the illusion that this is a democracy. But honestly, I don't know what's gonna happen in the next 3 years. Like, I mean, with everything that is going on, I really don't know what is gonna happen. We are still experiencing the aftershocks, and I lose hope more and more every day. Because he is tightening his grip more and more every day. And people feel hopeless. I could physically emotionally feel the change that was happening in Istanbul, and I can still feel it now. Like every time I went back the last 2 or 3 years, people were tired. Like people's attitude changed. The aura of the city changed. It's such a weird thing to say. I don't know how to describe, but just the general mood of the population. It really did have a big effect on it. people are so disheartened and upset with everything that is going on. And that happened, that it's very hard to, I don't know if we will, I hope we will overcome it in the next election. Something has to happen, something has to change, that's for sure. But I don't know how, because I remember this was like one of the biggest protests that happened in recent history, and one of the longest as well. And I remember thinking, even at the age of 17, I remember thinking, if he comes out of this without a scratch and without any consequences, we will have a dictator for a very long time, like at least 10-15 years. And that's currently, I mean, basically what has happened. I mean, he has been in power since 2002. Like, it's been almost 20 years. Please leave. Like, what are you doing still? Like, please just leave. But also, it's so frustrating because the biggest opposition to Hape, they're not, like, they failed. What they failed to do in the last government elections was to clearly distinguish themselves from the AKP, because they were basically, people were very frustrated that they were basically just running on the campaign of like, the AKP is bad and we're against them. But okay, but what we know that, we know that what he's saying is bullshit. Like, Erdogan said stuff like he doesn't believe in the equality, like men and women are not equal, because men have, like, women have different, like, women's role is very clear in the Quran, blah blah blah. Like, it's absolute bullshit. And, like, the population knows, people who are on the side of the JHP know that what he and his party is doing is, like, it should be illegal, it's not democratic, it's not, it's only fascist and authoritarian and dumb. And, by, like, you know, we know that, but what they fail to do is really set themselves apart from them in what they want to change in the country and how they're gonna do it. And so also one of the side effects of this that was that many, like, many people started their own party. Like, there was an increase in parties, and I think there was even one, no, I actually know that there was one that was founded by the woman, I think it's E-Party, like the good party, if you translate it. I don't remember her name though. Let me check real quick. Her name is Meral Akşenaş, and she's basically like, kind of, it's a secularist party, but they're kind of like liberal conservative. I don't even know what that means at this point, to be honest. I am very, very confused, but basically it was one of the parties that was founded due to all of these corruptions happening in 2017 to like rally. This was like literally, I think, a month or two before the it was founded in 2017 for the presidential elections in 2000, the last presidential elections in 2018. Why I'm messing up my own timeline, but somewhere like it was for that, not for the constitutional that was already passed at that point. But yeah. Ugh. It's very frustrating. But yes, we will continue. I think I don't think this is the end of it, for sure not. I think the country currently is in lockdown like any other country. It's very, like, the things that we can do is limited, because a lot of people had to flee the country, a lot of people are in prisons, but I don't think the movement died. I think it's still there, and it will be back. I think latest in the election year, I think it will be back. But let's hope for the best, I guess. Until then, there is not that much that we can do, to be honest. I mean, you can support journalists if you want. I will link some organizations that you can donate to if you want to support the cause. Other than that, you can there's, you know, if you want to know more about it, there is documentaries that you can watch. I think there was one called which one was it? It's called Jannetin Düşüşü, The Fall of Heaven, which is a bit dramatic, but like, yeah. There's that one. There's another one by a Polish filmmaker, I think. I will link them as well if you're interested in them. But yeah, I think most importantly is to keep an eye on what the government is doing and being critical, and staying alert and having these especially, I think what we have to do as a Turkish population is to come together and talk to each other, because we have been so polarized that now that has divided us even, like, through this polarization, we have been even more divided. And that's the biggest issue, that we are not coming together anymore, because we have to realize that we have been polarized by a third person that shouldn't matter in this conversation. Like, you and me, we are the same at the end of the day. We were born the same way and we will die the same way. You know, it's shouldn't matter. And what matters is that we can all live peacefully in a democratic and free country. But yeah, I'm just babbling on. But as I said before, 12 people have lost their lives during the protests, and I would like to basically have a moment of silence for them, after reading out their names, because part of remembering these protests is remembering the people who have given their life for it. And as I said, like, there was a lot more. There were almost 8,000, 9,000 people that got injured and who are now permanently living with disabilities because of this. But yeah, so the least we can do is remember those that, you know, are not with us anymore. And yeah. So there was Mehmet Ayvalıtaş, Abdullah Cömert, Mustafa Sarı, İrfan Tuna, Selim Önder, Ethem Sarısülük, Zeynep Eryaşar, Medeni Yıldırım, Ali İsmail Korkmaz, Ahmet Atakan, Serdar Kadakal, Berkin Elvan. These are all the people that are not with us anymore, unfortunately, and that were injured through tear gas and through rubber bullets, and died through the consequences. Or through sheer bruise, like sheer force. And I would like to have a moment of silence for them to remember them. Starting now. All right, thank you so much for joining me in this moment of silence. This is, I think, the least that we can do. They will not be forgotten, and their death will not be for nothing. We will make sure to be back and to fight and to push and to continue what has been started at Gezi Park, until justice is restored. And yeah, I don't really know how to end this episode, so I wish you all a safe and healthy week, and I will see you next Sunday. Bye.